B-Pod Studios.
This thing was earned.
Talkin' Pats.
You earned the trip.
Sucks.
He's got a history of ripping apart farm systems.
The Celtics are bending over backwards.
Get tired of the top line.
Buddy. This is your home for Boston sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub. Boston's home for sports. Tucker and Rich. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Are you ready?
This is the green light. Go. Ties burn the pavement. People want to know what makes Boston. Still here, still in your ear with a style so hot. You see where all the sun rays went.
Legs on the head, all being moved in a frenzy.
The blends be all the right cred.
Meaning potential.
Best of both worlds when we rocking over pearls on the instrumental.
Are you ready?
Ready, set,
jump to the rhythm as hard as you can go.
Keep it steady,
steady
to the letter, y'all.
Bet.
Turn it up, y'all, we still in the show.
But can you rock it like rocket fuel?
We talking about space or out your mind.
But can you rock it like rocket fuel?
That's a close encounter.
Can y'all make some noise, please?
Sports Hub. We are Dutcher and Rich. That's the new DJ Shadow album. This song's
That's
got
really
Taylor
good.
On it. Yeah, real good.
This is live from Kimmel?
Yeah.
He's got that, like, old-school 80s rap style, but the bed is unbelievable.
Well, I think it's intentional that they're doing the...
You and your chess man. We installed out in you and your yes man. And if the game had veins, we'll insert the needle. Up people the ground.
He says this Kimmel. Tell me the horns are live.
The horns are live.
Oh, that's awesome. I tell you what. Rap bands with, like, rappers with live bands should be the new thing. Like, that should be something, because it doesn't happen enough. Not the new thing. It's been around for a while. But they should just completely shift to that. I mean, completely throw away the DJ sitting there. Because, I mean, there's... Aren't... Seeing a rap artist with just a DJ is never a good
show.
Well,
no, it's just a horn section, and then it's DJ Shadow and the Beat Nuts. So there's three DJs.
Okay, so there's not a live drummer?
But they're actually DJing. No, there's not a live drummer. I mean, then DJ Shadow might as well not be there. They're doing every beat on a record. Like, it's not programmed, so... That is, it's good on Kimmel. But, they had a live horn section. On the album, I don't think it's a live horn section. Bert Breer is a senior NFL reporter and the lead content strategist for the MMQB. He's brought to you this morning by New England Fat Loss. If you're looking to lose weight, ask your doctor if they would recommend a plan with prepackaged foods and shakes or a real meal program, eating healthy food with New England Fat Loss. Bert, hello.
Hello, guys.
All right. So, Antonio Brown not coming to the Patriots.
Yeah, and you guys surprised? I mean, I don't know. Like, I felt like all of this, and it's funny because I've been asked by a bunch of people, like, well, you know, this is just a media creation. No, it's not. It was, like, if the Patriots really wanted to shut this down, go to your players and say, stop liking his posts on Instagram.
But would they ever
like,
do
stop,
that?
Like, just stop it. It was not a media creation because we saw, I mean, and look, like I'd never heard from anybody inside the building that this was a serious consideration. Okay. Like I hadn't heard that at all. And that's why I kept maintaining over the course of the last couple of weeks. Listen, I don't think the Crafts would allow this. I think Bill and Tom would do it. I do not think the Crafts would sign off on it. It would devalue everything that they've said about domestic violence over the last 23 years since the Christian Peter thing happened in 1996. However, you look at the tweet, which, I mean, like, does anyone believe that he actually wrote that tweet?
No, and it's the semicolon that gave it away, because I was joking. I was like...
Right, semicolon was there.
If you go through every single one of his Instagram posts or any social media, do you think that's the first time he's ever used a semicolon?
I mean, like... So,
I don't think I've ever used a semicolon, ever, even in college, probably.
So I think it was Ian. You have to go back to August.
Okay.
I think it was Ian, and I'm buddies with Ian Rappaport at NFL Network. You know, and I mean, I think he sent, like, AB a direct message when the whole thing happened in the summer with the Raiders.
Yeah.
And he got, a message back. Let's just say, and Ian went and just kind of like posted the message verbatim.
Yeah.
Let's just say there wasn't any semicolons. I mean, it was So, like, first of all, like that Matt, the tweet itself didn't look believable. Okay, it looked coached. It looked like somebody said, "Hey, you better apologize to the Crafts."
Who do you think told him that?
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it was somebody in Foxborough, not a decision maker, but if it was, you know,
Brady.
Brady, I mean, it could be anybody. You know what I mean? Like somebody who wants him back there could say, "Hey, listen, if you want there to be any opportunity of this happening, because why didn't he apologize to the Raiders?"
I mean, that's
what he did to the Raiders was worse, right?
No,
yes,
no.
It was
ripping on Robert Kraft's worse than anything he did with the Raiders.
He called Mike Mayock a cracker, and I don't have a problem with that word. To be clear, I don't have a problem with that word. But Mike Mayock did nothing to provoke that. Like, with the Robert Kraft thing, he was. Like, he's basically picking a scab, right? Picking an old scab.
Sure, there. Right.
But, like with Mayock, it was, like, open warf. The YouTube video?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, when he
basically tapping a phone call?
But Gruden said it was fine. So I could see why you wouldn't apologize for that. Like, that I understand.
What he did in Oakland was worse.
Yeah, it's because he wants to be back.
So if we're looking at this logically.
What's more unforgivable? That's probably the best way to look at it. And what he did with the Patriots is more
unforgivable. If we're looking at this logically, okay? if this is a message to the 32 teams. He's apologizing to both, right?
Yeah.
Like, if this is a message to the 32 NFL teams, I want back in. Sorry, Patriots. Sorry, Raiders.
Yeah.
Right? There's apologies to Mike Mayock as well as Robert Kraft. And I don't think it's, look, he needed to apologize to Kraft, but he also needs to apologize to Mike Mayock. He also needs to apologize to Sean Gruden because not only did he do those things while he was there, he, like, lit them on fire on the way out, too.
Right.
So, like, if that tweet was a message to all 32 teams. I think you include both. If it's a message to one, then you are only addressing one, which is what he did.
So
we have that piece of it, right? Yeah. We have that piece of it where he's only addressing one team. And then you have basically, and look, I don't want to sit here like a 15-year-old girl, like, you know, going through any people's Instagrams any more than you guys do about who likes what and whatever, all that different stuff. But, like, I guess in this era, co-signing on something is liking it, right? Like, co-signing on something is liking it on social media. So, like, Brady likes it. Gilmore likes it. These aren't guys down the roster. This isn't, like, some dude on the practice squad. This is a quarterback. This is the highest paid non-quarterback in the team.
Yeah.
That are co-signing it. So, like, you can't say that's a creation of the media. That's a creation of Antonio Brown and people in your locker room.
Do you think that Brady or somebody went to Jonathan Kraft, and do you think that if Jonathan Kraft had his way, he would have Antonio Brown back?
No.
So you think?
Because that was a theory that was yesterday, that
Jonathan Kraft, he was the one behind him getting this thing, Kraft, you know, this apology, because he knew that would be the first step.
I'm not sure.
His dad.
It was from incarcerated Bob.
Sure. Yeah. I'm not sure if it was up to Jonathan Kraft if Antonio Brown would have been here in the first place. I don't know that.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't be surprised. If this were Jonathan Kraft's call in a vacuum,
mm-hmm.
I think based on what I know about the guy, like, I don't know that he would have been here in the first
place.
Why
is that? What, he's less lenient?
Just
because
I think whenever he's the owner, I think that there's just like maybe going to be like just. Brighter lines about those sorts of things. Okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. He's very protective of the brand.
Like, it's just, yeah, bright. Like, just, I think, like, where Robert Kraft might be a little bit more pragmatic about things and say, well, if this means this, then this means that. Like, I think Jonathan Kraft will, like, this is my personal opinion, having been around the team for 15 years or, you know, I think that those lines will be brighter with Jonathan than they are. With and I don't even know if that's the right way to use the term.
No, it's
brighter
it's
red
a,
line.
It's a deeper line in the sand. I know what you mean. So is there going to be? Is he going to? Because I don't know how this whole interview went with the NFL. And apparently, word is coming out that I guess he had a pretty decent, strong case. He was fairly convincing. Is that true? And will he be back in the league? Even if not with the Patriots,
I don't think the NFL wants him back in the league this year. Which is why I think that they've kicked the can along. I think the NFL is well aware of how deep a hole it's in when it comes to domestic violence, and reintroducing like everything that happened in August and September, I don't think is something they're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they also know separately that they can't just arbitrarily punish him, right?
Yeah.
So the easiest thing for them to do right now is they didn't put him on the commissioner's exempt list. And they use that out, like, well, he's not on our roster, so we don't need to address this right now. But they sort of left that threat hanging out there, right? That, like, well, we could put him on the commissioner's exempt list if somebody signs him,
mm-hmm.
which is a huge part of why no one signed him.
Rich,
if you're going to take on this, if you're going to take on this huge PR hit, mm-hmm. if you take this huge PR hit for signing him,
yeah,
and then you don't know whether or not, like, they're going to turn around and put him on the commissioner's exempt list. It's one thing if you're going to, like, get the guy who caught 100 balls the last 7 years, right? Like, yeah. for that PR hit. But if you're going to take the PR hit and you don't know that you're getting anything, like, then you're not going to take that risk, which is sort of why they've kicked the can along.
Because it was interesting because a couple months ago, Antonio Brown came out with statements that did not really address the situation that was going on in maybe what people would consider the right way.
It's not ready, Fred.
Why not?
It should be there. Oh, there it is. Is this a
all I see is the word.
Is this a statement right here?
All I see is the way that it's slugged. Brown fart. That sounds awful. Brown fart.
Well, that's what he said. My bad, dog.
So he apologized.
$5. This is pretty freaking low.
He's accountable.
He was accountable for that.
You see, I was searching AB fart for Antonio Brown. It's just brown fart.
Yeah.
Brown fart brown two, fart, brown yeah. fart three.
Because we already had AB fart one through 100.
I'm sure we did.
Brown fart sounds like juicy. Like
the look on his face.
Just a smile.
So he's pleased with himself. He's got a sly little smile.
Very pleased with himself.
All right.
Russert, what do you think about that?
That was very muffled. You can tell the mic technology was not as good back then.
Appeared on that program.
All right.
Sound like a horn.
That's right. That's ripped from the headlines. That
it
happened.
Was ripped off. So, like, what do you think?
I'm looking at San Francisco right now as being a front runner to get Josh.
All right. We'll be right back.
More Toucher and Rich on 98.5 Sports Hub. Get it right, get it down, get it right now. Right now. Why the bait, get it right now. Why wouldn't they put me on timeout or lights down? Right, get it now, get it right now.
98.5 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Bert Breer from MMQB in studio. So the trials and tribulations of Myles Garrett continue. Information came out yesterday that there was a closed-door meeting between Myles Garrett and the league.
Yeah.
And he said that Mason Rudolph used a racial, what is it, epitaph?
Racial slur.
I don't know how to pronounce that word. Epitaph.
Well, you weren't into punk rock then.
Because epitaph is... That's like what, that's your, on your tombstone, right?
No, epitaph is on your tombstone.
But they're different words, right?
Oh, epithet.
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 Epithet. It sounds weird.
Racial epithet.
You're the writer. All right, so anyway, so he used a racial slur, and...
And you guys are the purveyors of the spoken word, so you should know how to pronounce it.
That would be us.
So,
as you can tell every morning.
So, all right, the Steelers defended Rudolph. Browns seem shocked.
Not one player... has said that they heard that from Myles Garrett, that there was a racial slur on either team. And that is like, I mean, the way
and that's why it's so hard to believe, right? Like, I mean, you would think like the first thing. So if you're Myles Garrett and you're an important, I mean, maybe that like was in contention for defensive player of the year. And that happens on the field and you're coming off the field in that Thursday night game. And you know, I may not play again this year. Like, you have to immediately know that, right?
Your quarterback called you out on TV like 5 minutes after that.
But he's talking about coming off the field.
If somebody said that to you, if that was why you flew off the handle, and, like, you knew I might be off the field for the rest of the year, wouldn't the first thing you do be going to the locker room and say, hey, look, guys, I feel awful. Like, this sucks. Like, but you have to know what happened. Like, you got, I want you guys to know what happened. Just so you have an idea of why I flew off the handle like I did and why maybe I won't be playing again this year. Here's why I did what I did. How is it that a week later, none of his teammates know?
Yeah.
But that's the thing that's hard about it, right?
Right. Because I always side with the person who says they heard it generally because, like, with it, I used the example of Adam Jones when he said that he heard racial slurs from the stands in Fenway. And I'm like, how does it benefit him? Why, like, why would he lie?
And look,
but hang on a second. But you'd say, like, you know, in these situations, why would you lie? But there's a reason why Myles Garrett would lie. And it was to a Hail Mary to try to save his ass.
Right. And I that's the flip side of it. Like, the Adam Jones thing, like, I stepped into that one, right? And, like, I honestly, there are, I mean, people who are friends of mine, like, still held that against me. And I was giving my opinion on the way Boston is and everything else. Sure. But I honestly, when I dealt with that, and you guys had me on the next day, I remember, like, how I got labeled. And I remember how hard that was for me to, like, no, that's not who I am. Like, I'm just giving you my opinion on what happened here. That's all.
Yeah.
And, like, we can still talk through this and everything else. But, like, there were a lot of people in the Deadspins of the world and everything else labeled me. And so I got, like, a little bit of a taste of what it was like where, like, okay, like, something happens. And now all of a sudden it's, like, it's really, really hard to shake.
Your opinion was, I've never heard that at a Red Sox game.
I've never heard that at a Red Sox game. And people said, people then took it, like, 15 steps in another direction. And all of a sudden I'm something that I'm... Like, look, like, I've lived my life for almost 40 years that I'm not. And, like, so I have an understanding. I have a little bit of an understanding of how hard it is if somebody wants to label you that way.
So imagine if you're Mason Rudolph.
So imagine if you're Mason Rudolph, right? Like, imagine if you're Mason Rudolph and you're playing in a league that's 80% black and you've done the right thing for 4 years, for your 3-4 years in the league, and now all of a sudden this gets thrown out there. I mean, look, like I said this the other day, no matter what, something reprehensible happened here. And we have to understand that, right? It's reprehensible if Mason Rudolph said that without question. And if he said that and it was found that he said that, he should be suspended because they cannot let that sort of thing happen on the field, period. And if you want to match his suspension to Myles Garrett's suspension, if he had said that, match his suspension to Myles Garrett's suspension, no problem. If he didn't say it, it's also reprehensible.
Yes.
It's reprehensible to label, to stick somebody with that because you cannot shake that.
Right, and that costs some money and, you know,
it costs some money. It also is reputation. Being a leader of men. If you're a quarterback and you're relying on all these different teammates of all different colors, right, that affects your job. That affects any kind of future employment. So... Who knows what's going to happen? The one thing I found interesting, too, is that I didn't realize this, but those appeals that they do for the NFL, these little hearings, they're not supposed to be made public, right?
Right.
So do you think that that was something he said just kind of...
I don't like what I call source guessing, right? Like, because I know how hard it is to build sources and to protect your information and everything else.
Yeah.
Do I think the league leaked that? No. Why would the league leak that? Why, what benefit would it serve the NFL?
No, you would want to.
Myles Garrett's people that leaked it? Because have to either be the league or Myles Garrett's people.
I mean, I think it would have to be. It wouldn't be Mason Rudolph's people, right?
No, the league
Who would be motivated to leak that?
No, you're right. The NFL would not want that.
Who would be motivated to get that out there?
No, you're right.
Right.
Like, the only people who'd be motivated to get it out there are people who are trying to defend Myles Garrett. So that takes it to another level, which is like, and you wonder because it like came out like an hour or two before the ruling was made. Like, the ruling came out. It does make you wonder, like, did they know they were about to lose? Did they know the league didn't believe them?
Yeah. And it was like a last ditch effort.
All right. Like, so like, if we can't win with the league, let's see if we can win the court of public opinion. And again, I don't know what was said on the field. I do know this. It is almost impossible to prove a negative.
Yeah.
And that's the other problem.
You can't prove that. And that's why people say, well, I mean, if they find out he didn't actually say it, then Myles Garrett should be suspended even longer. There's no way you can prove
it.
You
can't prove it.
It's also like the fastest investigation I've ever seen in the NFL.
And that's the other thing. Yeah.
Like, I mean, ever.
I mean, as many mics as they have out there, like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I would think, like, there'd be a way to figure it out. But, like, that's the thing is, like, maybe they were, you know, and here's the thing is, like, maybe they were in the process of looking for it or they were saying, okay, like, we're going to uphold the suspension, but we're going to keep digging because they have to, the thing is, they have to notify the teams.
Yeah.
Like, they're sort of under this obligation when it comes to suspensions, so teams can plan to notify them as quickly as they can. Like, maybe their plan was to keep digging, and then, you know, this gets thrown out there.
Now, I know since he's suspended, he obviously can't, like, speak, right, unless he puts something on Twitter. Like, he's not going to have any kind of... Because, I mean, there's follow-up questions you could ask, and, like, the number one being, why did you not tell anybody that he did
speak.
That?
I mean, he would just have to have... I mean... He could speak, but people can be telling him not to, too. His agent could tell him not to. The Browns could tell him not to.
I mean, if it truly happened, I would have no problem as his lawyer telling him to speak.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that would be the number one question is, why did you not tell anyone for an entire week? And why did none of your teammates hear it, know about it? There's no one who can back you up on this statement. Why did you wait this long? Because I'd like to know that explanation.
Yeah,
and maybe he has a great one. Maybe he does.
I mean, and we saw Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, Sheldon Richardson. How many guys in the Browns locker room yesterday said?
I've never heard anything about that.
Right.
Yeah.
And again, like I think if you're Myles Garrett and you heard that again, like one of the worst things you could possibly hear in a field is a racial slur.
It's also a death sentence if you say that on the field.
Right, right.
Or you're going to get killed.
Right. And so, like, if that actually happened, the first thing Myles Garrett would do, I would think, would be tell his teammates, I apologize, I'm sorry. Like, I'm sorry that, like, I can't be out there on the field with you mm-hmm. over the next however long. But here's what happened, just so you know. Like, and just so you have context of why it happened.
Sure.
Why, even if it doesn't happen immediately after, the next day,
yeah.
2 days later, like whatever it is, like a week later, they didn't know. The week later, they found out on Twitter just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I guess the one thing that came out of this more than anything is that I have found somebody with probably the most punchable face in the NFL, and that is Mason Rudolph. Like so it was something about that guy. I was like, oh yeah, he used to be what I thought Philip Rivers was. Like Philip Rivers used to have the most punchable face.
How about Ben Roethlisberger? Like he's just the guy he's replacing. You know?
No, and like
Roethlisberger's just nice and fat.
Right, he's just kind
chubby,
of fat,
chubby cheeks.
No, yeah. It's kind of
he's
that.
Like, let
just,
himself go.
I'm like a prick. You know what I mean? It's like and well, Osweiler had that for a
while. When Roethlisberger's your example, right? Like
no, Roethlisberger's cool because he's fat.
But like Mason Rudolph, now I see it. I'm like, oh man, I haven't felt this. Since the early days of Philip Rivers.
One person who can talk, Rich, is Antonio Brown. And he had some interesting...
This should really be on my quick hits.
No, I should have a computer. But nonetheless, Antonio Brown had some interesting... Because he's free to say whatever he wants.
He is.
And so he got on Instagram and had a...
Hey, I'm on that though. Pretty freaking low. I've been to bodybuilders, and this is pretty freaking low. I gotta stay away. Damn bad.
So, I mean, there's that side of the story. If you're really looking to dig deep.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did Nancy Grace have anything to say?
I don't know.
By the way, I pulled up the message from Antonio Brown to Ian.
Yeah.
Told me do not come in Thursday, bad my name. Then come work, give two papers after the press conference. No guaranteed, no way.
Yeah, okay. I don't understand any of that.
No semicolons in there.
No, I don't. That doesn't really sound like English. All right. Well,
Nancy Grace?
I believe he was
an English major, actually. So big.
Well, everyone's weighing in on this, Rich. All right. Very good. Sometimes, you know. It's an uncomfortable conversation when you're dealing with these kind of issues.
Bob Soucy, what do you think about all of this?
And they're exceptionally hot right now. And I will tell you, even Bob Soucy's farts are tiny. All right, here are the headlines.
Toucher and Rich. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
.985 the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich.
It sounds like Shaft.
A little bit.
Yeah, it does. Bert Breer is in studio from MMQB. All right, so we can ask you. Now, yesterday, the interview with Jim Gray.
Jim Gray goes, hey, you're starting to sound a little pep in your step.
The interview where the questions are the answers?
Yes, exactly. Yes. Where he, you know, it's a hard
Tommy, you sound like you got some pep in your step. A little less frustrated than when we spoke to you on Monday night.
All right, so obviously Tom Brady wants to change.
Bring in the hard-hitting question.
Obviously, Tom Brady wants to change the narrative. He did not like.
Tom, seems like, yeah, they're giving you a rough time out there. Like, doesn't seem like you're having much help.
Yeah, and this was last week. That was on Monday. So, what was his deal, in your opinion, in terms of...
was he sending a message? Yeah. Was Brady?
No, I mean, I think it's as simple as, again, this is the way he's wired. You're hyper-competitive, and I think people want him to shut that off, like, at the team part, right, and not have it apply to the individual part.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that. Like, this isn't something that's a learned behavior. It's the way he's wired. And so if you're that hyper-competitive, you're about your team. And, like, if he would be that this upset if the team lost, you should expect him to be this upset if he doesn't play well, right?
Like,
I just think this is all about, like, where he expects himself to be individually, where he expects the offense to be, how they've fallen short of that. And I have no problem with that because I think if you're still playing at that age, if you're hauling your ass out there on a Thursday in November to go through drills that you've done 300 different times, the only reason you're doing it is to be holding that trophy at the end in February.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what it takes from a team standpoint, you know what it takes as an offense, and you know what it takes individually to get there. And so just because the team won, if you don't feel like the offense or you individually are playing at the level you need to play to get there,
mm-hmm.
of course you're going to be upset about that.
Right. Well, then I'm sorry, real quick.
And
right?
Especially with a hyper-competitive person
sure.
like Brady.
He said, I think it was the end of last season or maybe the middle of the season, that he was going to play until he just wasn't fun anymore for him.
Yeah.
This seems to be the one season that more than any, even after wins, he doesn't look like he's having... I mean, he looks joyless after a lot of these games. Are you reading anything into that as maybe being one step closer to maybe this?
Maybe. I mean,
I can piggyback on that in that because I was going to ask sort of the same kind of question. Do you see his play falling off? And you know, if he sees that his skills are dwindling, would that accelerate?
I think he's at the John Elway with Mike Shanahan stage of his career. And by the way, I think like Rivers is there now too.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Like, so you watch Rivers on Monday night, you got like,
it was awful.
Awful, right?
Yep.
Okay, so do you know who his tackles were? Trey Pipkins and Trent Scott. You probably haven't heard of either of them, right?
Nope.
Okay, so the offensive line's been a huge issue for them all year. And Phillip Rivers used to be the type of quarterback, good enough quarterback, where you could have those sorts of issues and he could lift you up.
Mm-hmm.
He's not that quarterback anymore. You can still win with Phillip Rivers, but you need to be really good around him. And you remember, like, John Elway, and this was during when we were all kids, how good were those, the 86, 87, and 89 Broncos?
Yeah.
They weren't great.
No.
John Elway freaking carried those teams to the Super Bowl, right? Three teams to the Super Bowl. He wasn't capable of doing that in the late 90s, but they were so good around him
mm-hmm.
that it was like, okay, like, well, you don't need you to be John Elway in 1987 anymore. Like, we just need you to be good enough and every so often summon that sort of performance, but you don't need to be that week to week. My point is, like, I think everybody's waiting for some of these guys to fall off of a cliff. And sometimes it happens. Like, with Favre, it happened. With Peyton Manning, it happened. I think with Brady and even with Rivers now, maybe you see them settling into the John Elway with Mike Shanahan phase of their career, where if you're asking them to carry the team or the offense every week, it's going to be too much.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot to ask any player to do that. And it speaks to their greatness that they were ever able to do it.
Right.
But to ask them to do that now is a lot. And so, you know, is Tom Brady now at the John Elway with Mike Shanahan stage of his career, where Elway, you remember, Ed McCaffrey, Rod Smith, Shannon Sharpe, one of the best offensive lines in football, Terrell Davis, a top five defense. He could throw for 150 yards and it wouldn't matter. The Patriots defense is good enough where a lot of weeks that can happen now. But I think he feels like, I don't know, like his personal performance may be affected by outside forces. He individually needs to be better, but the offense also needs to be better around
him. Is this offense good enough, though? I mean, take a look at and think, you know, let's say everyone's healthy. Sanu's, you know, back and with what he has and with the running backs, and let's say
the skill positions are, the line isn't.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think that's that to me is why I can't remember the time, a time over the last 19 years since they first won, when they were as reliant as in they were as reliant on an as inexperienced a player as Isaiah Wynn. Like, I can't. Like,
yeah, I mean, how many total games? You could say Brady himself.
Somebody, like, and I said that to somebody else earlier this week, and they shot back at me, like, with Brady himself. And, like, yeah, I mean, like, that was such a lightning in the bottle situation.
Right. I mean, you're talking about a guy that and out of nowhere became the best quarterback.
But Charlie Weiss took over that team.
And they also didn't think at that point that they were, like, it wasn't like it is now, where the expectation was they were getting the Super Bowl. Yeah. It was a magic carpet ride. You know what I mean? Like, no one knew what they were at that point. Mm-hmm. Like, Isaiah Wynn's played 82 career snaps. Like, 82 career snaps. So, like, he's shown a lot of potential. And he could be great. And maybe he's the next in the line where you've had so much stability at that position from Matt Light to Nate Solder. But you're very, very reliant now on a player with almost no NFL experience. And I just can't remember the last time they were in that position over the last 18 years. Because they almost always, with young players, they almost always have somebody in front of them or they're managing them in a certain way. And I just can't remember a situation where they were that reliant and that important of a spot at this juncture of the year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a guy with that little experience.
He's going to get hit a lot on Sunday, too, you would have to imagine, with the Dallas defense. if we just...
Are we back to the farts now?
Jesus, Bert.
I just saw random laughing.
Never mind. Jesus. Wallet gets a surgery and you got to pop in here.
The answer is yes.
It's not.
Of course we're back to it.
It's not funny if you call it out. You have to say something. Jesus.
I just tried
no comic time in bastard. What you would say is, do you think Isaiah Wynn has what it takes?
And to that, I would say...
And then you go...
The MSNBC guy.
You go, okay. Thank you. All right. All right. TGIF, am I right? All right. We will be right back. Finish things up with Bert Breer.
Shout to my Umbala fam, my diabetes fam, yeah. Boy, even hipsters ain't safe. You gotta be careful what part of your face you shave. They say, why is Reezy chat about race? Why you breathing about air just like how?
98.5, the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. And guess who is involved in the Miles Garrett situation?
Oh, I'm sure I know the referee you're talking about.
Yes, right? It's the wrangle.
Brought this up last week. I told you, the guy couldn't get the damn thing at the end of the game. They had to, like, bring players back on. Garrett Gilbert had to, like, come in and take the knee. Mm-hmm. Like, it was Cleet Blakeman who screwed the whole thing up, if you ask me.
And so Cleet Blakeman is doing the Jets-Raiders game. The Jets are a home dog.
Yes.
Which you take the wrangle on that.
Yes.
That's the ref angle when it comes to betting.
We have an
angle. His term. Yes. He coined it. It's the wrangle.
Coined it in the NBA. Last year it went 75% in the NBA playoffs. And this year we're trying to use it in the NFL. We have two refs. Cleet Blakeman. Underdogs are home teams. The London game, the Texans Jags game.
Yep.
Texans were underdogs at kickoff. Texans covered the spread. So Cleet Blakeman always has some. And then last week, the Cleveland was a 3-point favorite, I believe. And you know it's either the home team or the underdog or both. And at the end of the game with that Steelers game, it got all out of hand. The public dog was the Steelers. But Cleet Blakeman had the home team. And at the end of the game, he couldn't get everything together. We saw it. It was wild. They wanted both players. The coaches were huddled together. They wanted everybody off the field. They couldn't even finish the game. They couldn't even take a knee to end the game to get enough players out there.
So you're saying that Mary Kay Cabot from the Cleveland Plain Dealer, she's probably one of the more respected writers out there in Cleveland. If you didn't hear the story, so Miles Garrett ended up having his appeal session with the NFL on Wednesday. And during that, which was supposed to be a private and something that wasn't supposed to be leaked out to anyone, mm-hmm. he said that
Mason Rudolph had used a racial slur, and he was saying, that's not justifying what I did, but I just want to tell you where my head was at the time. And that ended up being leaked out. And since then, nobody, no players on both Cleveland or the Steelers have said they heard anything about that. As a matter of fact, it was surprise from, as you said, Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, Sheldon Baker Richardson. Mayfield. I mean, Sheldon Richardson, all of these different people. People who are on the field. They're all saying that this is the first time we're hearing about this.
Yeah. So Mary Kay Cabot's report was, instead of sound, the NFL based its conclusion on the game official's report and camera angles. Referee Cleet Blakeman was in close proximity to Garrett and Rudolph as they scuffled and did not hear a racial slur. Now, Sports by Brooks tweeted out a picture that shows Cleet Blakeman wasn't really an official close to Rudolph and Garrett as it happened, but there were, I think that's Ramon Foster, one of the Steeler offensive linemen is standing right there. So he probably would have heard it if there was something yelled at the sort of volume where Garrett could hear.
I just want somebody to ask Myles Garrett, why didn't you tell anyone?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if
this That to me is the most damning thing of the whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's been, almost a week now, right? Was it Thursday Night Football last year or last week?
This is seriously, Myles Garrett's, maybe the second most important player on the Browns roster behind Baker Mayfield, and it's only because Baker Mayfield's the quarterback, right?
Yeah, right.
And the best player. Player on the team.
He'll still get his contract, right? I mean, he's getting...
Who, Garrett?
Yeah. I mean,
no, he loses all the money that he...
No, I mean, next, he'll still get... Like, he's still get paid.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, he's a freak show. So, right. I mean, he's Defensive Player of the Year candidate. This is, losing him is an enormous hit, right? And so if you're him and you know that, you're aware of how good a player you are, you're aware of what you mean to the team, aren't you going to explain? Aren't you going to give your teammates an explanation?
Sure.
Here's why you'll be without me for the next 6 weeks.
Yeah, you would think so.
I mean, I just don't, I don't know if you know this, but the way that Mason Rudolph handled it, I guess the news sort of broke during practice yesterday.
Oh, yeah, he was supposed to talk to the press, and then he found out about it. He's like, I'm not talking to anybody.
Yeah, so Rudolph gathered the captains, the Steeler captains, and basically asked them, what should I do? Because I didn't say anything. What should I do? And if you guys look, you can see it. Cam Hayward came out, who's one of the most tenured players there, I think.
Yeah,
probably behind
talked for a while, yeah.
Probably behind Roethlisberger, the guy who's been there the longest, really, really impassioned defense, amazing.
Yeah, Rudolph. He talked for so long that I stopped watching it. He just kept talking and talking. I wish Ben Roethlisberger came in there with, three hamburgers.
What's up, guys? What's the new kid up to?
I love
that's the old. That's the old Corey Dillon. You guys know how I knew when Corey Dillon was done?
No.
Was my second year covering the team. 2006, Corey Dillon would come into the locker room, just strolling at, 11:15 with a gigantic McDonald's bag.
Roethlisberger does not take care of himself. He doesn't.
If you look close enough, you can see. Well, I told you guys the Roethlisberger story from a couple of years ago.
I don't remember.
So he had this, he's like a player from 1978. You know, when these guys would work jobs in the offseason, they would show up out of shape and they'd use camp to get back in shape.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like Roethlisberger still uses camp to get in shape. And so one year he showed up and he was like all of a sudden, he looked okay. He looked like he was in fighting shape. You know, he looked like he was ready to go. And so I asked him after practice, I said, what are you doing differently? He's like, oh, yeah, you know, it's been great. I mixed in a half hour of cardio every day in the off season. Not exactly a TB12.
Half hour.
Yeah. He's legitimately heavy.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. It's and he's the thing is, he's a good enough he's a good enough athlete. If you watched him at Miami of Ohio, he was capable of running.
He's
a really good athlete. Early in his career, he could do it. And now
I just love how one of his best attributes has been tough to tackle.
Well, no.
he can't bring him down.
When he was in the league, when he was first in the league and players weren't as big, I mean, you couldn't bring him down. But now he'd rather get hit than move.
Yep. Yeah.
He's just fine, hit me.
Seriously, look at pictures of him from Miami of Ohio. It doesn't look like the same guy.
No.
He's big. He looks cut.
Yes, he does. He is there. No one is. He wouldn't tell you that he's working out.
I think he had the douche, chin strap beard back then, too.
I think you're absolutely like
I
the Amish I like
think,
kind
I think
of
beard. He had that going. Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I remember that as well. All right. Bert Breer, it's always a pleasure. You can
Thanks,
hear
guys.
Him. You can hear him here throughout the week. Also, you can read him at MMQB.
All right, let you guys get back to your fart jokes.
Well, they never really stop, do they? That's the entire show, if you listen to some of the listeners. All right, there will be no commercials here, just the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.